Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
It's Friday and it is 3 o'clock, and that means it's Movies and Booze. It is Stephanie in for Sean today on the Moncrief Show, and joining me in studio I have Fionnuala Jones, Linda Coogan and Deirdre Malumby. Welcome to the studio, everyone.
Good afternoon.
I was rinsing Fionnuala there because she was already slugging back the wine. I was like, okay, go easy. Like, it's not a party. Like, we're going to review them. Linda, tell us about what wines we're going to be talking about today.
I will. You see, Fionnuala's jumping into the one that has alcohol in it because I have a non-alcoholic one as well. So,
So
we have two German wines for a change, because they are unsung heroes. And I just think, why not give them a little bit of a shout out? So we've got one that is alcoholic. 12.5% only, but it's not like a big blockbuster. It's a nice, cool climate white, and then a non-0.5% alcohol. So that's kind of as low as we can go, nearly, with the non-alcoholic. But again, I just tasted both of these recently at a wine portfolio tasting, and I was really impressed by the two of them.
Great. I'm looking forward to hearing all about it and getting Fionnuala's take on it, if she's not too stoicious by the time we get to her. Deirdre, talk to us about what we're going to be reviewing today.
Yeah, so Monkey Man is the first movie up for discussion. So this is like a kind of action, thriller, high stakes, kind of adrenaline rush of a movie. It's starring, written and directed by Dev Patel, which is very impressive that he's doing all three. And then the second movie we're talking about is One Night in Mill Street, which is an Irish sports documentary. Very interesting. I have no interest in sports whatsoever, and I was still very invested in this. And if you happen to be a horror fan, The First Omen is also out this week, but I decided to give that a miss because I don't like horror. But that's another option.
I really like horror. I'm really disappointed, but we can talk about it anyway. Fionnuala, if you care to join us, tell us what's happening in the showbiz world.
We're getting a Legally Blonde TV show, should people want that. Do we need that? Yeah, that was what we were discussing outside. It is coming from Reese Witherspoon's production company, Hello Sunshine, and they've done great things, you know, with the likes of Daisy Jones and the Six previously. Writing-wise, it's coming from the two people behind the Gossip Girl reboot, so Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage. That's what kind of sets me on edge, because that Gossip Girl reboot only ran for 2 seasons and wasn't very good.
But the whole point of Legally Blonde is that she's blonde, or like, you know, she's ditzy and whatever, and then we take her seriously at the end. But like, that's it. Like, what part of that story are we coming into the TV show?
Yeah, how do you flesh that out? I'm not sure, especially if there's a whole thing, because I think there's like no details as to what, like, what story it's going to follow. But from what I gather, they're trying to flesh it out and like have more characters and have a universe. But again, by that entire conceit, how does that work? How does that translate? And it's also entirely separate to the fact that there is a Legally Blonde 3 currently in the works, like a separate film.
Oh, wow.
That's being written by Mindy Kaling and Danny Gore, but that's been in the works for several years. No further word on that. So I'm kind of like, what's going to come first? Chicken or egg? And again, does anyone really want a Legally Blonde 3? I think people think they do. It's that nostalgia thing of, we loved this first thing. We loved Reese Witherspoon.
We just loved one moment in a movie where we were like, oh my God, her attention to beauty, facts and detail has won this court case for her.
Yeah.
I don't think we need, this does not need to be a serialized situation.
Yeah. Could it be interesting? I don't like it, because people, I love legal shows. Like, I loved The Good Wife. I loved Suits. But again, if it goes back to that thing of the whole thing was she was kind of an idiot and then became like not an idiot and stuck to the man.
She got a pair of glasses and a suit.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how we flesh that out over 6 to 8 episodes, personally. It's coming to Amazon anyway, I forgot to say that. But I'll keep you posted when we have more words on casting or any of that.
Right, okay. How, like, would you watch this?
Is your one that's in White Lotus, what's...
Jennifer Coolidge?
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll get her back in some... And I'm sure that Reese will come back in some capacity, but not as her character, like,
yeah, I think people will go back just purely for nostalgic reasons.
Yeah,
what's a drop and snap or
bend
what
and snap? I saw you doing that. You were like, when you were talking about the one moment, Linda,
the
was
one
like,
moment, bend and snap. Bend and snap.
I don't know. I kind of have mixed feelings about this. I feel like I'll complain, but I will ultimately watch it. It reminds me a bit about how, you know, how we got a Mean Girls sort of reboot recently in Mean Girls the musical.
Yeah,
and I have to say, I really, really enjoyed that.
I really enjoyed it too. I couldn't get over how like cross people were about it. I think it was because it wasn't really marketed as a musical.
Exactly.
And then people went in and they were like, oh, singing, I hate this, which fair enough. But I thought it was fun.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it ended up working really well. I think Legally Blonde actually also was adapted for a musical, which ended up being a hit. So we have seen this story revisited before. I want to give it the benefit of the doubt. I think it'll work.
Okay.
Let's see.
Okay. I mean, Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen the first Mean Girls.
Okay.
Or the second Mean Girls.
Okay.
But I feel like it's one of those films that just by being a millennial, like my DNA has seen it because it was just quoted at me so much.
Fair, yeah.
Yeah, is that is the same with the second one? Like, is it still as quotable?
See, the thing is, it's like, it's not a direct sequel. It's a straight, it's kind of pretty much a straight adaptation, but just with singing. And they incorporate a lot of the original elements for like costuming and stuff like that from the first one and some quotes and stuff. But it is also kind of very much trying to be its own thing in a way, I would say. Deirdre, would you agree?
Yeah, that's fair. It was a lot of fun. And I mean, the actress who played Regina George absolutely was incredible.
Renee Rapp.
Yes.
Unbelievable, yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited to see her in more. Cast her in Legally Blonde, why not?
Yeah, actually, yeah. I would say that, yeah.
Yeah.
I want to talk about either, you can pick between Gillian Anderson or J-Lo.
Let's talk about J-Lo because...
Okay, because J-Lo is J-Lo.
I mean...
Jennifer Lopez, for those of you who haven't heard of her.
So Jennifer Lopez, she self-funded this Is Me Now sequel album that had a movie with it as well, like a movie with like a narrative. I'm using very loose quotation marks there. A narrative and then this documentary that kind of documented the making of the album that saw her, you know, she's back with Ben Affleck and kind of they're revisiting that relationship and why they got back together and all this jazz, blah, blah. The album doesn't do that well despite the fact that she self-funded it. I think it was like $20 million, right? Mm-hmm. Self-funded, whatever. The album doesn't do that well. She announces this tour then in support of this album called This Is Me Now, right? And then like there's loads of dates all over the States. She's ended up having to cancel a couple of them because of weak sales. And she's now had to rename the tour because people just don't want to go because people think it's just this album. She said to rename it, This Is Me, ellipsis, Live, The Greatest Hits. And it's just this kind of another, I don't know, like knock on her case of just really trying to make herself happen again or like get another wind or act in this career that just doesn't seem to be working. I don't know. Did you see any of the documentary? Or?
No, I didn't. But it makes me really sad. Like she was... I thought she was amazing when I was about 14.
Yeah.
And I had a mini disc player and I illegally transferred somebody else's CD. Didn't she do a collaboration with...
Which one? Diddy or LL Cool J?
LL Cool J, yeah. No, let's not go with
Diddy. Yeah, let's not go with Diddy.
But anyway, so she was just really cool and then she did Made in Manhattan and I was like, huh, she can act, kind of. And then
she can act is the thing. Like, she absolutely can act.
And now I'm just kind of like, oh, J-Lo, like, you were so cool and this is just so thirsty.
Yeah. It's very...
I want her to not care so much.
But she does. And like in some ways, like sometimes I do want that for my artists. But and like I actually appreciate the documentary because she's showing things that no other artist would ever show. You'd never get it from the likes of Taylor Swift, Beyonce, the candidness. But in some ways, I also think it's worked against her because we're now all kind of looking at her being like, why are you telling us this? Why are you showing us?
Like what kind of stuff is she telling us?
You know, like there's this whole thing of like the candidness with the soul, how she wrote the album. She wrote it based off a book of like poems and love letters that Ben sent her while they were together during their initial relationship. I think a little bit in the interim, maybe when they were both single and obviously when they got back together. And there's a scene where, you know, they're poring over this to inform like they're writing for the album, her and her collaborators. Mm-hmm. Ben Affleck comes into the room and is like, I think though, because the title of the book that he gave her with the letters is The Greatest Love Story Never Told. And he kind of comes in and is like, the kind of whole point of that was that no one was ever supposed to hear, but like it was between us. And now you're like, you're writing a whole album off it. There's another scene as well where she's like ringing up people or like her assistant is informing her of all the people that they've approached to be in the movie part of this album cycle. And like loads of people said no, like Taylor Swift said no, loads of other people. It's just no after no after no. And I'm like, again, I appreciate you including this because we'd never usually see this, but it is also just like,
cringe.
A bit embarrassing. Yeah, it's a little bit embarrassing. And as you said, for someone who is so talented, was so successful, to like the album, I think barely got in the top 40 in the States.
But what's the difference then? And we'll move on to wine after this. But what's the difference with like, you know, that the bit in the documentary with Victoria David Beckham, where he's like, you didn't have a posh, you know, where he kind of undermines what she's saying to
about
camera as well.
Going to school in the Rolls Royce,
and it just made people love them both so much. Like, why isn't this turning to love for J-Lo?
That's an interesting question. I'm not really sure. I think it's just because she is always trying to hammer home how relatable she is. Even that scene that's gone viral at the minute.
From the block,
she's just Jenny from the block, but like she's not. You know what I mean? And I think the thing with the David Beckham and the Victoria thing was that like it was like you had that balance of like Victoria trying to be like, no, we are like
Jenny,
all of the
Victoria
normal.
From the block.
I am like Victoria from the block, and David's like, well, no, actually. And it's the thing with their relationship. Like people are obsessed with them. Okay. I don't know. That is an interesting point to make. I don't know. She's in a weird point in her career, I think.
Thank you for saying I raised an interesting point. We have a text in here, WhatsApp, saying Legally Blonde is like the female version of the movie My Cousin Vinny. I don't get the reference.
I don't know what that movie is either.
Oh, I have seen it.
Yes?
No, I think that kind of, I mean, I think they're both great films like separately, but I wouldn't say one is kind of the female version of the other. I don't know. I've never kind of made that comparison in my head.
Okay, well,
definitely worth a watch.
Another
though,
WhatsApp. Excellent. Yes. J-Lo was excellent in Out of Sight with George Clooney. It was a Steven Soderbergh movie. Anyway, let's move on to wine. I am German and I don't drink alcohol. So shall we start with the alcohol one or the non-alcohol one?
The alcohol one.
Oh, yeah, because Fionnuala's going to be stoked if we don't start.
I usually bring in spittoons for everyone, but I didn't bring it in today because I knew, Fionnuala, you weren't there.
Yeah, because I'm not spitting out
today. So basically, yeah, like Germany, like nobody drinks, of course people drink German wine.
It's not the most popular.
It is not, because everyone thinks they're all sweet and Liebermädchen and all this kind of stuff. They just have this, you know, preconceived notion that all German wines are sweet and nasty and all of this. And it's like, they are not. There's so much quality from Germany. It's unreal. I have a diploma in wine. I did the WSET diploma back in 2010. And to be honest, I found Germany so intimidating to study because you need to know the language. I can't speak English, never mind any other language. So it's really hard to study German wine. The main thing is if you can say the word trocken, meaning dry, yep. Then you're nearly halfway there with a German wine label. So this one is Geil. Is that okay?
Geil,
Stephanie, yeah.
Which Geil. Means cool.
Cool. So I picked a cool wine for today. Pinot Blanc, which is brilliant because it used to say Weißburgunder on the label, which is the same grape, but they've changed, Geil have changed the label to say Pinot Blanc. So that's the actual grape variety. So stunning wine. So I think Pinot Blanc is a grape that is so versatile. Usually you see it from Alsace in northern France. So here we have it from the Rhine-Hessen area in Germany. And it is family-owned vineyard since 1871. Lovely history there. And Jonas and Elizabeth, they're second generation of making the wines here. So elegant, so fresh, so cool. Again, the climate, this is where you get the majority of white wine grapes here. You only get Pinot Noir generally, and it's called Spätburgunder. Is that okay?
Yeah. Perfect.
I was practicing so much for this. I didn't realise that you were half German, actually, and I just happened to pick these, so it was coincidence. But yeah, stick your nose in and see.
So would Germany be known more for its white wines than reds?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's because of the temperature?
Yeah. Cooler areas like the Mosel valleys and all that, just the altitude and everything, just cooler, fresh, more acidity. So high acidity, mainly Riesling is what it's known for. But I decided to go for the Pinot Blanc today. Okay. Now, I adored when I tasted these wines last week. They're in loads of really good independents. When I tried the Pinot Blanc, it stood out for me as being special, do you know? Dinner party, safe, easy drinking style, but a little bit of texture.
For people who don't like drink German wines, if you... And maybe this is like too basic a question, but if you like what kind of wine, you will like this, you know? Like if you like a French something, you might like this.
If you like a French Pinot Blanc, you will like this.
Okay.
If you like if you like a Sauvignon Blanc, a nice, fresh, crisp, acidic wine, you can try a German Riesling, but make sure it says Trocken on the label. If it doesn't say Trocken, there'll be some level of sweetness.
Okay.
And kind of you need to know a little bit more about the wine to, you know, understand that. So generally you'll get those styles in good off license and they will know the difference to tell you if it's paired with certain food and things like that. But Trocken is the basics. Right. Do you know what I mean? Like it just...
And how much of a financial risk are we taking with this?
So yeah, like they're not going to be inexpensive wines because there's lower yield, they're quality made. This is organic farming. They're quite sustainable. It's a family run business. And so this is €22.
Okay,
you know,
terrible.
Like there is some that you can get in Dunn's and O'Brien if you want to start your journey into German wine, and you can start maybe €12, €14. But again, Trocken if you want the dry style and work your way up to this, because this is much more complex. There's 20% of this wine in an oak barrel and the rest is in stainless steel. So it gives a kind of creamy texture to it. So it's pear. Haven't even tasted yet. Could I taste it?
Yeah, everyone have a little taste there, Fionnuala. You can pick yourself off the floor and let us know what you think.
But it just has that citrus note, but some pear. I love this wine. I really love this wine. It just has that texture to it that, you know, there's definitely a freshness with the acidity. You can absolutely, your mouth is watering, but there's a kind of voluptuousness to it for it just being a white from a cool region, which you'd normally expect from something that has spent more time in a, like an oak Chardonnay or something like that. It's so fresh, so light. It's a perfect spring, summer white, as far as I'm concerned. So yeah, €22. D6 off license, Dring Store, Morton's in Ranelagh, 1601 in Kinsale and Cork, because I got given out to for not having any Cork wines. Sweeney's right D3.
So. And rightly so.
And, you know, two ladies. The Allotment, Judevan and Redmond's are some of the stockists. So right. Again, all independents supporting like family run wineries.
Sounds great. What do people drink? Like, would you drink this with a particular meal? Like, I know people have like red wine with steak. Here's me asking like the baby questions. But if you were having people over for dinner, what would you be serving that would be acceptable to serve?
So this is an amazing aperitif, but it will also go so well with loads of different. You can get away with like delicate fish with a creamy sauce with some lemon on the side. Again, I had a dish recently that was chicken with rice and asparagus in a lemon creamy sauce. And this would be gorgeous with that. Quiches with like goat cheese, spinach, anything kind of eggy, creamy, textured like that. But pork with applesauce will bring out the apple notes of it as well. Yeah. So really gorgeous.
Bit of Nando's. match with a bit of Nando's. Okay, so Deirdre, we're going to be coming back to you after the break. Which movie are we going to review first?
Well, we start with Monkey Man.
Let's start with Monkey Man.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
Take this.
I don't want charity. What I need is a job.
This is King's. We just don't hire off the street. Where's your references? Your CV? Look, I don't have time for all this. You pass it over, John.
This. There's my CV. That's bleach. Chemical. Oil. Give me the job someone wants to do. I'll do it. No complaint. This is all I know.
Anyone who talks outside these walls, anyone who forgets their place, doesn't turn out well for them. Understood?
I'm nervous just listening to it.
Yeah, it's intense.
I love watching movies that are like gripping but not violent, but like have a bit of mystery and something that like keeps you on, you know, kind of edge of your seat stuff. Is that this? Sorry, this was Monkey Man. I need to remind you that this is a movie called Monkey Man, which is rated 16 and is on general release today.
So it ticks all those boxes, except it's violent also. So I would warn you against that. It gets very, very bloody. I mean, by the finale, just everyone's covered in red gunk. So just to warn you about that. So if you're not into that, you probably won't enjoy this film. But I don't know. I've kind of, over the years, I've kind of grown this. Not that I enjoy violence or anything, but I do. I don't know. I kind of, maybe I've become a bit boyish or something. Maybe it's from being with my husband so many years, and we kind of like the like more like kind of off the wall, like, you know how like the 80s action movies, like you go back and watch the likes of like RoboCop, and they're surprisingly violent if you go back and watch those now. Like, I quite like those kind of movies. So this is very John Wick, I suppose, is kind of the main point of comparison. In fact, I think I saw someone in the production team actually related it being like John Wick if it was set in Mumbai, which is essentially what this film is. And they actually mentioned the film John Wick when the character goes to kind of buy a gun in a kind of underground shop and everything. So they're very aware that this movie is probably going to be compared to that. But I don't necessarily see that as a bad comparison, because even though it is kind of John Wick-esque, I suppose, from the perspective of it being like an action movie, the lead character kind of has this sense of like menace about him. There's a bit of like mystery and intrigue there as well. Like, it's just, it's such a good film that I don't really mind all that stuff. And the thing as well, that distinguishes it, I think, from something like John Wick is, while John Wick is all action, 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 boom, 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 like one scene leading into another, like this film I found like surprisingly, like it's kind of a compelling family drama as well. And really the kind of motivation for the main character, and just to kind of go into the story briefly, basically he's an anonymous young man. He's kind of, his character is kind of referred to as Kid in the film, but he fights in the ring at night under this identity of Monkey Man, and he manages to kind of con his way into working at this like seedy club that caters for the rich and corrupt. And if you listen to the clip there, that was kind of him having a conversation with the manager. He eventually kind of talks her into hiring him and everything, and it's basically a step in his plan to enact revenge against those who destroyed his life as a child. And through like flashbacks, we really find out this tragic backstory involving him and his mum when he was a little boy. And it's really actually quite beautiful and emotional and moving. And I suppose I just wasn't expecting those kind of layers to this film. I thought it was going to be all action. And I think if you watch the trailer, that's what you think of it. But there's so much more going on in it. Like themes that this film is like dealing with. It's looking at like issues of violence against women. It's looking at the caste system. It's looking at police brutality. So there are a lot of layers to it. There are a lot of kind of issues that Dev Patel is kind of grappling with as a director here. And I was really impressed by how well he managed to actually kind of look at all these things in the one movie.
I'm a big fan of Dev Patel, but it's always a red flag for me. I don't know about you, Fionnuala. If something is written, directed and acted by someone else, by one person, it's like, this is next level narcissism now, and there's nobody to tell you, reel it in, you know?
Yeah, fair. I would trust Dev Patel with my life, though, I think. So
that's a very big statement now.
Yeah, he's very handsome. No, but he's also just incredibly gifted and talented at what he does. And I'm very intrigued. I haven't seen this yet. I'm very intrigued with the sounds up my street. So, but yeah, I take your point. You can't, sometimes it is a bit of a an ego project.
Would you say, Fionnuala, that, or would you say, Deirdre, that, like, it does it suffer because of him being all the hat wearer?
I don't think so necessarily. I mean, if he's taking a step back from anything in the film, it's the acting, actually. Like, I think it's a terrifically well-written movie. And I really appreciate the fact that it's so, like, India-centric as well, because you see kind of the poverty and, you know, characters living in the streets. Everyone's kind of scraping to get a living. And I think from a Western perspective, we just don't see those types of stories, I suppose, because there's a whole, like, Bollywood cinema. It's just not something we're kind of used to. So I really kind of appreciate that Dev Patel is kind of, bringing this, like, movie to kind of a Western audience. But as well, it's interesting, even though he is the one who's kind of written, directed and, you know, stars in the film, it's really Jordan Peele's name that's kind of been put at the forefront. So if you watch any of the trailers, they have in ginormous writing, Jordan Peele as producer. And Dev Patel has talked a lot about the fact that Jordan Peele came on the film as a producer, really kind of helped, like, get it over the line in terms of financing, in terms of marketing and stuff like that. Because, I mean, Jordan Peele's work, you know, over the last several years, he's been such a big name, you know, in terms of cinema.
But I feel like the font is getting smaller. Like, that first film was amazing.
Mm.
And then they've gotten, in my opinion, significantly less amazing.
Mm.
And that, like, you know, but great. Like, if he's going to lend his name to something and help get it over the line, that's great.
And I mean, he's really kind of associated with bringing, like, original cinema, you know, Jordan Peele. So I think that that name has kind of really helped bolster the movie and everything. But if you're looking for, like, a proper, like, action thriller, something that's, like, going to have you at the edge of your seat, I think you will really enjoy this. But I do warn you, if you're not into violence in your movies, this is just not for you.
And where can we see it?
It's general release, out from today.
As in cinema?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sorry. Just imagine something not being available on my couch. So, sorry, we have a WhatsApp in here saying, my cousin Vinny is a great comparison for Legally Blonde. Both seemingly inappropriate candidates for lawyers, both a bit lost in that world, both use their personal experience to win, to win cases and excel. Fair play to the person who spotted that, Austin in Fermoy. Thank you for getting in touch, Austin. And another text in saying, I saw Blue Nun in Tesco yesterday. What a blast from the past. Are they still selling Blue Nun?
Probably the bottom shelf dusty bottle, maybe. Right. But yeah, they are. Like, they did rebrand to try and give it a new lease of life. And Bend of the River as well, another German wine that they're trying to make cooler again. Make German wine cool again.
Make a guile again. Talk to us about this Game of Thrones story that one of the actresses has chronic claustrophobia because of a waterboarding scene that she had to film.
Yeah, Hannah Waddingham, who people would know from, if they don't, she had a minor part in Game of Thrones, but people probably best know her from Ted Lasso. She was on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert this week and talked about how she developed chronic claustrophobia from filming this scene. I think it's at the end of season 6. I actually watched it again recently, in which her character is being like essentially waterboarded with wine by Cersei, and she's strapped down, obviously, like, sounded very intense, but she talked about it and said it was like 10 hours of shooting. Again, if you've seen that scene, it's not incredibly long, and that's not to say, again, I wasn't there on set, I don't know, it seems like a really long amount of time to be filming such an intense scene like that, but she said it was horrific, 10 hours of being actually waterboarded, like actually, and kind of talked about the fact that, you know, nobody said anything at the time because people were just so happy to be doing it because it was Game of Thrones. You know what I mean? It had, like, we hadn't got to season 8 territory yet where it was like, it was still prestige-y. Like, it was a show you wanted to be on. And she remembers, like, leaving the studio or whatever, or wherever they were shooting it. And obviously she's covered in wine and she has blonde hair. The wine's like stained her hair. She's like strap marks all over her body. She met this other actor and he was like, God, what happened to you? And she kind of explained. And he said, oh, like, I'm after crawling through SHIT for like up to my knees for however long, whatever. And we were just saying it, like off air. I don't know. I feel like just based on kind of other stories, I remember there wasn't like, well, actually, I didn't remember. I only learned this recently. There was no intimacy coordinator on set for a lot of Game of Thrones, if not all of it, which is bonkers. Because then if you've seen it, a lot of bonking, you know what I mean? A lot of explicit scenes that would require an intimacy coordinator. So I'm just wondering if there are going to be kind of more stories coming out like this from actors. Now, I will say she tells this story in kind of a jovial, like she doesn't seem to have any ill will towards the Game of Thrones showrunner. But like a mad thing to come away from psychologically, and having just watched the scene again recently, I was like, it's intense. Like, I'd wonder how necessary it was.
I am always concerned about the things that young actors will do for a role, and often not being paid. Now, they were being paid in Game of Thrones, but I don't know, young actors are so desperate, I guess is a word, to be acting, to get experience under their belt, that they're so easy to
coerce, manipulate.
Yeah, take advantage of it. It's just not kind of fair at all. Talk to me about one of my faves, the Karate Kid reboot.
Yes. I'm not sure when we're getting this, but they've basically added a load of castings, essentially. You are a big Karate Kid fan, are you?
Yeah, like, what's not to love, like?
Yeah, that's true. But again, I suppose it comes back to that thing of, like, why do we just keep rebooting things? You know what I mean? Especially given there was...
If they're going to reboot Legally Blonde, they can reboot the Karate Kid.
But this is the thing. They already did kind of technically reboot it in the late noughties,
with Will Smith's son
and that incredible Justin Bieber song, Never Say Never, which is probably the best thing about the whole movie. Anyway, we're getting another reboot. And as I said, they're after adding loads to the cast. Well, I will say Ralph Macchio and Jackie Chan are reprising their roles for this.
Which is significant, like.
Which is significant, yeah. And it's kind of like, I think it more illustrates that they shouldn't have done the middle one. Anyway, I'll stop being so cynical.
I feel like you're being really cynical and you're taking all my enthusiasm. I'm
going
to go
joy.
To an ad break, and afterwards we're going to come back and talk about the second wine, which has no alcohol in it, so it's not going to be helpful to you at all.
No.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
Welcome back to Movies and Booze on Moncrief with Stephanie Prysner sitting in for Sean, in studio with Fionnuala Jones, Linda Coogan and Dee Malumbi. Or Deirdre Malumbi. Which do you prefer to be called, Dee or Deirdre?
I kind of go by both these days. We'll go with Dee.
We'll go with Dee. You are who you are. We are going to move on to our second wine, which...
Do we have to? I'm only joking.
We do have to. It is alcohol free, so... You may.
This was specially for you, to be honest with you, because by choice, I would not normally drink a non-alcoholic wine.
Well, you were telling me there that it's €17.
Yeah.
Which is an awful hefty amount for basically not wine. Like, it's like paying for 7-Up, no?
Okay. So I understand your point as a non-drinker, and you too, Deirdre, right? That you will probably be looking for what most consumers are looking for from wine, a cheap drink to enjoy, yeah?
Just something that we have in our hand so people don't ask us if we're on antibiotics.
I understand completely, exactly. I know. However, as a wine drinker, this for me is one of the closest things that I've found that actually tastes like a wine.
Okay.
So for me, if I want to actually enjoy the flavour, textures, smelling it, tasting it, and all the components of that, for me, this is the closest, one of the closest things. Yous were both saying that you enjoy a bit of, you know, the McGuigan's 0% and you'd like the sparkling version.
Something so sparkling or like fruity or something.
They're really fruit forward. So they are like fruit juice. Mm-hmm. This particular wine, the Cola Null.
Yeah.
Cola Null. I'll say it real quick.
Yeah.
They basically are, they make non-alcoholic wine in a lab in Berlin, and they buy the grapes in from vineyards. They work with small farmers and they buy the grapes in, and it's really, you know, they're trying to make the best wine tasting textured wine that they drink that they can that has no alcohol. So they have to make the wine as normal and then they have to take the alcohol out. So it's an extra process that is, you know, time consuming, expensive to do in a lab. And they don't use any additives, colorings, anything else to alter or manipulate the wine. So it's as pure as it can be. And for me, like, this kind of wine would be on, you know, good restaurants, wine lists and things like that as well.
Is anyone really, like, anyone who's like really into their wine, are they going to choose a zero alcohol one?
If we had to.
Okay, yeah. So say you're driving and you want to have
so it. If I actually wanted the impression of wine, but I didn't want Coca-Cola, I didn't want one of them, you know, I wouldn't go for the generically mass-produced branded sparkling and all that kind of stuff. The main thing I'd say is look for an actual grape on the label. If you want the real kind of inverted commas here, taste and texture and aromas of a wine.
Well, let's have a taste of this.
Yeah, like user broke on. It's a bit too much like wine for me.
Well, I'm just getting a lot of honey. Like, yeah, there's an aftertaste of wine, but I'm definitely getting like, I have a sore throat, put a spoon of honey into that for me. What about you, Fionnuala?
I like it. It's very juicy. I'm kind of liking it more than I thought I would.
Yeah, same. So, because we like our wine, so I think this is tastes like wine, but it does have that honey, tangerine, peachy thing going on.
Yeah.
But it has a nice mouth feel and it is really pure.
Mm.
Do you know? Now, when I had to drink non-alcohol, had to force to during my pregnancies, the only wines that were available at then were like Torres wines, yes, and Natured 0%. And again, they both have Muscat and Syrah on the red as the grape. So that's the starting point. Look for a non-alcoholic wine that has a grape named on it.
Yeah.
At least they're starting with something that did taste like something. So for me, this is a Riesling wine, high acidity. And it's got that, it does have that tangerine, peachy textured flavours, and like it's lingering, the flavour is lingering, but it probably is too dry for you to, rather than fruity or bubbles. They do have a rosé and a sparkling rosé, which are incredible, but there isn't huge distribution yet. But
okay, so
you know, I thought they were sensational. I thought they were sensational.
In a blind taste test, would you know this isn't this has no alcohol?
No.
You wouldn't?
No.
So then why do people, if you wouldn't know, why would you drink the alcohol?
Because it doesn't have alcohol. Therefore, you can actually drink a bottle of it.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, I think if they make zero alcohol beverages so well, why do people drink the alcohol ones when they have, like, they do the damage?
Because this is 17, that's 22, and you're getting 12.5% buzz off the...
So for the buzz. Okay,
I know. But, like, it is expensive, but you're paying for the quality of it. But absolutely get your inexpensive one if you want a fruitier one, but it's not as pure, and there may be things added to make it taste fruity and juicy and all the rest, yeah.
Deirdre D, let's talk about our second movie. What is it?
Yeah, so this is One Night in Mill Street. So in Ireland in the year 1995, there was a boxing match of legend proportions. It was between underdog Steve the Celtic Warrior Collins and champion at the time, Chris Simply the Best Eubank. And this took place in the eponymous Mill Street. So this film has kind of been doing like the festival circus so far, and now it's going to cinemas.
We're going to have a little listen to a clip.
I remember Steve arriving dressed like Darby O'Gill. I mean, it was extraordinary, you know, to see him in the flat cap, the three-piece suit, like thorn-proof suit. I think he had a shillelagh and this Irish wolfhound. I don't know where he got the Irish wolfhound. It wasn't his, like, you know, but he had an Irish wolfhound. And he got out of this green Jaguar. And I couldn't believe it when I saw him coming. Like, I didn't recognize him at first, you know, and he walks into the hotel. I knew something was going on. Like, you know, whatever this was, it was part of a plan.
You know, no one got underneath my skin. You know, I was always kind of objective. But he did a very good job. You see, he turned up, you got to remember, I'm champion of the world. So he turns up 45 minutes late. He comes dressed as an Irish countryman. He then proceeds to speak only in Irish. Excellent tactics.
That sounds so entertaining.
Yeah.
So this is a real boxing match that happened in Cork.
Yeah,
in the 90s.
In the 90s, yeah, yeah. And what you would have heard in that clip there, it's hilarious. It's one of my favourite parts of the movie. So Steve Collins, who was kind of always the underdog, he was like your local Irish boxer. He basically he showed up to their first press conference dressed up in like tweed jacket. You know, the little, what you call it, the Peaky Blinders cap and everything. Only speaking in Irish, totally trying to kind of psych Chris Eubank out. And he was like really, really kind of appalled about this. And not only that, but Steve, within this conference, then proceeded to kind of challenge Chris Eubank. He was saying that he was denying his African heritage. He was saying he was impersonating an English gentleman. You know, you would have heard Chris Eubank's kind of posh accent there and everything. And Chris Eubank absolutely hated this. And later on that day, when the mayor offered the guy a tour of the city, the boxer basically told him to, you know, F off or something. So really from the get-go, like, things were intense between these two boxers. But I think what works so well about this documentary is they both have such like great personalities, and it's so fascinating to watch historically what was happening between these two fighters, but also like the interviews with both of them in kind of the modern day. It's really interesting to see those two personalities come back. And then kind of the third personality, I suppose you could almost call it, of the movie is Mill Street itself. And you're introduced to the person who kind of was the guy who like ran it, Noel Duggan. And he's like a real kind of Irish country type of guy. And he talks about how he was able to convince the Eurovision organisers into hosting the renowned competition there just a few years prior. And then he also kind of talked them into hosting this big epic boxing match here, because this was just one kind of stop in Chris Eubank's international tour. He was basically challenged to defend his title 8 times over 12 months. So it was an absolutely huge deal in terms of like the boxing community at the time. And then there was just this like little match that happened in Ireland that ended up just completely exploding
Why would he bother? It sounds like, you know, you'd see on Twitter now, like Rory McIlroy or some any famous sports person, and there'll be some bot in the comments being like, I'm a better golfer than you, I'll take you on. Like, why did Chris Eubank agree to fight this sort of amateur Irish boxer?
Well, he was offered 10 million to defend his title times over the 12 months. So, like, you know, there was a good bit of money involved.
Who offered him the money?
So it would have been kind of the actual, like, organisers behind this and everything. So there is a whole big, like, kind of boxing association. Again, I don't know enough about sports to kind of properly get into this. But even the fact that, like, Chris Eubank was kind of given, like, the proper training and everything, whereas Steve Collins, the Irish guy in it, he talks about basically landing in Las Vegas hoping to train. His coach never turned up. He had to actually cycle around the place trying to find like gyms to train in. And eventually he kind of settled on using this hypnotist as his coach. But it ended up kind of, I don't want to like give away the film or anything if you haven't seen it, but it all kind of worked out in a way. But it's just such a fascinating and kind of crazy story how all of this kind of unraveled. And it's something that you don't really see as much these days, because oftentimes, you know, when someone accomplishes this, now, this is just my understanding, again, of the sport. Sorry if I'm totally naive here. You won't get this happening as often, because often when boxers actually like accomplish this title of best, like middleweight or whatever, they won't actually accept other competitions, because once they're kind of knocked out in a match, they then lose that title. So they want to kind of cling on to it for all it's worth. So the fact that this was kind of happening in the 90s, like, it was a really big deal in terms of like what was happening in sports.
And what does Steve do now?
What does Steve do now?
Yeah.
It doesn't really get into that, I suppose. It's all about kind of looking at this kind of moment. Exactly.
Okay. Before we finish up, I want to know about your one from X-Files.
Gillian Anderson. She is in Scoop, which is out now on Netflix. So it like goes behind the scenes of that Prince Andrew interview. She plays Emily Maitlis. Yeah, it looks really, really good. But obviously she's doing a lot of press around that. And she's been asked about this, another X-Files reboot, which I wasn't familiar they were doing. But it's actually being headed up by Ryan Coogler, who would have been behind Black Panther and Black Panther 2. So now I'm kind of like more on board because I heard an interview and I was like, no, I think they tried it again. Like, I don't know if we should do it again. But basically, she said she's on board. She called Coogler a bit of a genius. She said she doesn't know whether she's going to be involved in the reboot at all. Those conversations haven't happened yet. I'd imagine Ryan Coogler will want to hard reboot it, and maybe they'll be kind of, you know, Mulder and Scully will be like side characters. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it'll focus on them. But basically, if it happens, she's up for it. She just said, Ryan, call me, essentially. So
Ryan followed me on Instagram.
DM me.
Tell me about... But Scoop is a fictionalized version of the interview that happened with Prince Andrew, where he said that he was in Pizza Express.
Exactly, yeah. It's going behind the scenes of how they got the interview, the booker on that particular show who got it. It's based on a book. It's true, but it's like a fictionalized retelling of it. Because obviously Gillian Anderson did an interview Prince Andrew, and it's not Prince Andrew in the show, but
yes,
imagine that. But that would be
how
watch.
It went down. It's not
exactly.
And Deirdre, just before we finish up, where can people see the Chris Eubank documentary?
So One Night in Mill Street, this I think is going on general release, but certainly the likes of like Lighthouse Cinema and IFI will be showing it.
Okay, so again, one that's on general release. I just didn't know that meant that you can't watch it on Netflix. Anyway, that is all we have time for. Do you want to just give people a reminder of the name of the two wines before we finish up?
Yeah, so Guile Pinot Blanc and Coulee Null 0%, and that's available in 64 wines, The Corkscrew, Green Man, Morton's Branagh and Avoca.
Thank you so very much.
Okay.
And thank you to everyone for listening.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.